The other thing you can see on the chart on the front is that even though the required match is a dollar of local funding for every dollar of state funding, the reality is that each dollar of state funding has been matched by more than $7 of local funding. So the local effort is very substantial. While the bulk of the local funds come from cities and counties, volunteers often work to raise funds as well by holding used book sales, bake sales, teas, and soliciting donations from local donors. And in one community, the children even collected pennies to help raise the funds to renovate their library. So people really do love their libraries. In fact, Minnesota ranks number one in the nation in the number of people who have library cards per capita. And yet they often can't raise what they need on their own in order to fund their libraries, and so they need a bit of help from the state. We have a lot of older library buildings in Minnesota. 52% of our public library buildings were built before 1980, and 25% were built before 1950. And as you know, library service has changed dramatically since these libraries were built. Many of these older buildings do not have adequate space for public access computers, for children's programs, for young adults study and research, or to accommodate new technology. We need to upgrade our libraries statewide. Our survey indicates that we can anticipate about $107 million worth of projects applying for whatever amount you provide in this year's bonding bill. And that's the other handout that you have, is a list of likely applicants. And you can see that they're from all over the state, and there is plenty of demand for these grants. In closing, I want to emphasize that public libraries are not just a local resource. A library card from your local library enables you to borrow money, borrow materials from, you're borrowing money for us so that you can borrow materials from almost any public library in Minnesota. As a result, public libraries often serve people from well beyond the borders of the cities and counties that fund them, and that's why we think it's appropriate for the state to participate in helping communities have up-to-date modern library facilities. Thank you.
Ms. Conley.
Thank you, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. I will just be very brief. Washington County built a new library in Forest Lake in 2006-07. We received $200,000 from this grant program for a building that cost us just under $7 million. We view this as a great restatement of our partnership with the state. We work closely to provide access to state government services through our public libraries. Our buildings serve as focal points for community discussion and community decision making, and we would just urge you both. I'm also the vice chair, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair of the MLA Ledge Committee. On behalf of MLA, we would urge you to continue this partnership and provide some funding for bonding. Thank you.
Representative Albright has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just curious. We hear a lot about the development and build out of the fiber optic network. And in light of that, I'm just wondering if you could speak to the usage of bricks and mortar libraries versus the World Wide Web Library as a resource for informational gathering data. You know, we talk about big data, we hear about it. I'm just wondering if this is a bit in conflict with the assessment that we're all moving to the internet age.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative, I think, let me use an example of School District 833, which is South Washington County, in partnership with the Washington County buildings, library buildings. We recently, in partnership with them, had the school district put fiber optics, their cable fiber, into our two buildings in Woodbury and in Cottage Grove. Why did we do that? As schools are moving more and more to textbookless education through using iPads, they still need access to a free place to gather to educate themselves after the school buildings close at 2:30. So my immediate thing that came into my head when the representative was bringing this issue up is, we serve as a place for education, as a place for communication, and fiber optics is critical, but it doesn't replace the need for the libraries. It expands the use of those facilities. And we will be going outside, we will be going outside the traditional building.
Representative Rudolph?
Thank you, Madam Chair. In connection with the age of the libraries, how many of them are Carnegie libraries? Do you have any idea?
I don't.
We might get that. We can have to get that to you.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, we can get that to you. There's a lovely book called Libraries, and it's about Minnesota Carnegie libraries. And I want to say 17, but don't hold me to that. I will get that information to the Chair.
Representative representative, the Capital Investment Committee did see one library, the Jackson Library, and when we came back from that, we did look at the language and talk to our staff to see how flexible is the language to respond to a particular dilemma as a library thinks to reshape itself. I think we have no more questions. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we'll have Representative Fritz. And Representative Fritz, I don't know if you were in the room. As you know, we have a session at 9:30, which was rather unexpected. So we're, as you can see, we're moving rather quickly.
Have a seat. Thank you, Madam Chair, and I actually just...
House File 2034.
And we won't take up a whole lot of time. We've been here before, and thank you, Madam Chair and members, for the opportunity once again to present our request for the Minnesota State Academies, which is in Faribault, my hometown. And thank you for coming down and visiting, and I invite you all back anytime. We love showing off our beautiful campus and the great work that we do down there. And we do have a request of $15,259,000, and I think you can see the breakdown of that. You know, we have asset preservation, that's the $3 million, and then the $10 million is the Frechette Hall. And you've been down there many, many years, 10 years that I know of, and that I've been with you. And that building is at least 50 years old, so it is... definitely time to demolish and build a new building. We'd be very appreciative of that. And then the $1,500,000 for the Pollard Hall. And I'm going to turn it over to the superintendent, who is still new to us down there, Brad Harper.
Mr. Harper, welcome to the committee.
Good morning again. This is my second year presenting to the various committees, and I am still learning. And so if my presentation is not as you would like it, please feel free to ask questions.
It needs to be short.
And we will make sure that it stays short. The academies have been around since the Civil War, and we serve students from across the state that are deaf and that are blind. And it's a residential facility. The residential facility that we're talking about today is Frechette Hall. Frechette Hall is approximately 50 years old, and the members of the committees that have visited last summer saw the condition of that facility. It's deteriorating as we speak. It's energy inefficient, and it is in need of replacement. We have done two pre-designs in order to create an effective model to replace the dormitory, and we are ready to move forward with those plans should we get support and funding from the legislature, which we hope to have happen this year. It's important to realize that the residential component of the facilities is essential to the overall functioning. Students live there for 5 out of the 7 days, and it's a place where a great deal of socialization occurs through the many, many different dorm activities. The planned dormitory replacement will provide residents, but also has areas for activities and for educational study times or study locations during the afternoon and evening. We are also asking for asset preservation funds to help maintain the facility down in Faribault. It's both schools, the school for the deaf and the school for the blind, and it's important to realize that some of those buildings are on the National Register of Historic Places. So that additional funding for asset preservation will help us maintain those buildings and those assets. That's basically what I want to say quickly, and if you have questions, I would like to try to address those.
And is Mr. Dirks here for questions, or do you have additional testimony?
Just
to answer questions.
Well, Madam Chair, I have to mention that the academies are very frugal with their requests. Last year, we funded in the Education Finance Committee, we replaced an oven that dated back to the days of President Calvin Coolidge. So they are very frugal.
And what the Capital Investment Committee discovered in so many places in the state, including your campus, those buildings that were built, as you say, they're on the historic register, that were built in the early 1900s, turn of the century, are still standing and strong and can be repurposed, but something like Frechette Hall, we assume was built in the 60s and 70s, we have to tear down because between the windows and, I mean, the nature of that period of time was that we didn't put up lasting structures, and you're feeling the impact.
Yes, we are.
Any other questions? I think you were thorough. Thank you very much.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you, members. And again, the invitation to come and tour and visit is an open invitation to all of you anytime that I can. Thank you.
Thank you very much.
And now we'll have the Perpich Center for Arts. This is there's not a bill, but a presentation of their agency's request. Welcome to the committee. And members, you have a folder that looks like this in your. Welcome.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, members of Capital Investment and Education Finance Committee and House Support Personnel, my name is Sue Mackert. I'm Executive Director of the Perpich Center for Arts Education, and it's a pleasure to see all of you this morning. The Perpich Center capital bonding request to Minnesota Management and Budget and the Governor was for $3,921,000 for asset preservation. This was approved by the Center's Board of Directors after careful deliberation and supported research. Our request was derived following a facilities assessment conducted by an independent contractor hired by the Department of Administration. This contractor, as I understand it, is evaluating all state facilities and identifying greatest needs for asset preservation, maintenance, health, and safety. We isolated those needs that were deemed number one, highest, and most critical priority for asset preservation. Governor Dayton's bill calls for an expenditure of $2,736,000 with an additional $2 million for planning in fiscal year 16 and another $2 million in fiscal year 18. You have a synopsis of your request and a brief history of the Perpich Center in our role as the state agency responsible for arts education services for all school districts in Minnesota. From the Golden Valley campus, of which this request is spoken for, we operate five buildings that support a statewide library, a professional development center, an arts high school, a dormitory, and a storage and maintenance facility. Again, your handout shows our impact in the state and where we operate from primarily. At this time, Madam Chair and Mr. Chair, I would like to invite Mr. Nash, who is with me at the table. He's our building maintenance foreman, who knows every single nook and cranny of the Perpich campus, and I would like him to offer any comments and respond to questions. Thank you.
And we assume Mr. Nash is not related to Jenny Nash, our committee administrator, whether they've met, we don't know.
I'll actually find out, Madam Chair. I'm doing a genealogy study of my family.
Welcome to the committee. Please identify yourself.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, my name is Bill Nash. I'm the building maintenance foreman for the Perpich Center. Primarily, everything that we're requesting is a result of the real property management system facilities condition assessment that we recently did. We're asking for primarily life, health, and safety issues throughout the campus. We're a residential campus with high school-age students, and everything that we're looking for with the dormitory is very significant. A lot of our older buildings had subpar equipment and infrastructure installed back when they were built back in the 60s and 70s. Part of the facilities condition assessment found that the sub panels and main disconnect panels in that building have a history now of starting to fail and allowing energy to surge through the disconnect panels, creating fire hazards. That dormitory has those panels throughout, so we're looking to replace that and alleviate a safety issue. As well as the campus lighting, the fire alarm system, restrooms. When we first built our West Wing back in 1997, they added on to the existing administration building for the former Golden Valley Lutheran College. What they did back then was they moved the old systems from the original building into the addition. So we're dealing with systems that we can no longer find parts for. If we do find parts, as an example, for the fire alarm system, we have to get them from England in a remanufactured situation because they don't make them anymore. So everything we're trying to do here is to bring the buildings back up to where they should be. We've had a history, at least since I've been there since 2006, of getting our buildings back in the condition that they need to be in so that we can serve our student population and visitors as well.
Representative Ward has a question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just real quick, can you tell us the breakdown of, you know, your students as far as a percent of students coming from you know, greater Minnesota versus the metro area? Because I think that's important for us all to know.
Madam Chair, Representative Ward, we are pretty much even split among our students who come from the rural area and the metro area. And in our dormitory, we can house 172 students, and those are all relegated for the first students who live 17 miles and further out.
Thank you. No fault. Thank you.
Okay. I think there are no further questions. So I think this piece that you gave us is helpful, and thank you very much.
Thank you very much.
And Representative Anzell, the next two are yours, so we'll keep you up there. We're starting with 2047 Deer River.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. This is a request from Independent School District 317 in Deer River, Minnesota. Deer River is a small community of approximately 1,000 citizens located on the extreme western edge of Itasca County along Highway 2, and it abuts upon the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. For many, many years, this community, community leaders in the school district, senior citizens, and advocates for early childhood have identified the need of having a facility, a multi-age facility in the community where elders, many of whom are Native Americans, mentoring Native American students living in poverty in the school district. There is this sense that a facility blending the unique talents of the elderly with the needs of children in a facility would be a good thing for this school district and for the people in this school. This is a community where the school district has 70% free and reduced lunch. We have a growing senior population and a population of elders interested in mentoring young people. And that's basically what this request is. The community is currently working on developing an endowment and matching dollars should we appropriate bonding for this project. I stand for questions.
And Representative Anzell, we always fund an amount of money for early childhood centers that then are available, and that's administered by which by DHS. And I wonder, because I see you have early childhood classes, whether has there been investigation into whether you might be eligible for that application? That's something we can talk through with you as well.
Thank you, Madam Chair, for bringing that up. The short answer is yes, there is interest and eligibility issues regarding that.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Anzalek, it says here in my research that no match is required. However, you said that there's going to be a possible endowment and a match by your community if this makes it part of the bonding bill. How is that going to be verified? if it's not in the actual bill?
Madam Chair and Representative, since your information was provided to you, the community has indicated to me that they are interested in pursuing local matching funds in order to make this project come to fruition.
Madam Chairman, so then with that, Representatives, does that have to be an amendment? Will that be an amendment to your bill then to require a match?
Madam Chair, Representative, not at this time. I would prefer to see how this evolves first.
There is some language, and I'm looking for Ms. Dyson if she's in the room. There is some language in the governor's bill that universally looks at that issue of a match, and so maybe we'll take a look at that, whether that meets the question that you're raising.
And then, Madam Chairman, just a last question for me. Representative, is there currently this program in Deer River that provides for early childhood development and or a recreational area for the senior citizens in the great city of Deer River, which I've been there before, and Shelley's Diner is a fine establishment, a great little city. So,
Madam Chair and Representative, please come back again and visit. There are, of course, early childhood initiatives that have begun in the school district, but currently there is no facility of this kind available.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Ansel, most, I think, school districts in the district that I represent would, try to do a levy and use local property taxes to pay for this. I'm just wondering, are there different circumstances with Deer River on why they wouldn't do that?
Thank you, Madam Chair, and thank you for asking that question, Representative Erdahl. This school district is among the most property poor districts in the entire state. Much of the land mass is in trust within the Leech Lake Indian Reservation. Much of the land is within the Chippewa National Forest, which of course is tax exempt. And much of the property parcels are located on those magnificent lakes in northern Minnesota, whereby seasonal recreational cabins are not contributing as much to school districts in northern Minnesota as we would like. We enjoy the seasonal and recreational amenities and the cabins that many of you own. We just wish you'd pay some taxes.
And members, this is, if we had had more time, Tim Strom would have presented this, but this is why we gave you this little piece. We rarely do geobonding in the area of K-12 education, but this piece describes a few things like maximum effort capital loans, et cetera, a few programs that historically have been developed, and we might spend a little more time in capital investment. We might even invite Mr. Strom in to go over his piece with us. Mm-hmm. I think we have no more questions, so you can go on to your next bill.
Thank you very much. Once again, thank you, Madam Chair.
This is House File 2049.
House File 2049. By the way, I'm joined here at the witness table by Mary Ives from Grand Rapids, a community leader and someone who has been intimately involved with the Rife Center for the Performing Arts over the years. And to her right is Mr. Dave Marty, the current president of the Rife Center Council. Members, the Rife Center for the Performing Arts in Grand Rapids has been in existence since the early 1980s. It's named after Miles Rife, who was the CEO of the Blandin Paper Company, located in Grand Rapids, which is, of course, a famous employer and a famous contributor to good works throughout the state of Minnesota for many, many years through its foundation. What has happened here, and the reason we are here with this request, is as with most amenities such as arts or infrastructure, what was state of the art in the early 1980s no longer is. It is not ADA compliant. We have restroom issues. The stage needs remodeling and retrofitting. Aging equipment needs to be replaced. And really and truly, this Rife Center for the Performing Arts is one of the jewels of northern Minnesota. I know many of you don't oftentimes think of northern Minnesota as a place for art and culture and the finer things, and you think of us in other often positive ways. but really and truly, pardon? Thank you. But really and truly, this is a facility used by school children, used by nonprofits, used by the performing arts, drama, theater, speech, all of those things that make our area a great area, just like your areas. So we this has regional significance. We have resolutions of support from most of the counties and most of the municipalities throughout northern Minnesota. And lastly, in my previous bill, we talked a little bit about match. Well, with regard to this project, this is literally a 50-50 project, with approximately half of the funds coming from local matches, endowments, tremendously generous gifts and contributions from the community, from community leaders, so that this is a project that we hope you will give serious consideration to. And Ms. Ives and Mr. Marty are here to further enlighten you.
Welcome to the committee, Ms. Ives.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I appreciate the opportunity to address this joint committee because I want you to understand that this is really a unique facility. We have a partnership with the school district. Our Performing Arts Center is attached to District 318 High School. And this allows all of our band concerts from the school to utilize this facility. The teachers' meetings, the parent meetings, everything is held in this center. But at the same time, the community as a partner has the opportunities to see some really class acts. We bring in at least 43 performing groups every year. We've had 43,000 people attend events at this facility in 2013. We have a very unique relationship with education. It's our intent to really enrich education. We have a bus system where we pay buses to pick up children in a large regional area. We had over 7,000 school children attend events at the Rife from as far as International Falls, Duluth, Bemidji. We bring them in from all of the neighboring school districts. This allows them to see live theater. We have a wonderful Italian orchestral society, so there's music. We have a wonderful director from Duluth that comes in to provide a wonderful musical experience for the children. We have relationships for dance. We have over 700 children involved in dance programming. And so there's a lot of things going on in this center, fully utilized. Another point that I would very much like to make is to agree with Representative Ansel. We have already raised, at this point, matching monies by putting out a challenge to our community, a $500,000 challenge, which has almost been met. We're at $420,000. And we also had raised originally to get the project going. We've been working on this for 3 years. We raised $500,000 from the board of directors and the steering committee to make it possible for us to be shovel ready for this request to you for bonding. So we will have a complete 50% match by the time you will have to make your decision on the bonding bill.
Perfect. Mr. Marty. And I don't know if you're going to mention, because we have some Minneapolis people at the table, your partnership with the dance troupe at the Schubert.
The James Sewell partnership, Madam Chair. Mr. Chair, thank you very much for the invitation to speak. Yes, we're so very painfully proud in our community of the Rife Regional Performing Arts Center. We have an ongoing relationship with the James Sewell Ballet Company. As a matter of fact, James Sewell will be in our community next week for an extended residency with our students, and our students will be traveling here to the Twin Cities to perform in the Cole stage in April. We are very proud of this, but as Representative Ansel pointed out, what was state-of-the-art in 1981 has fallen by the wayside. The lines in the lobby with the bathroom issues are embarrassing beyond belief. The ADA is not compliant. We have some serious issues that need to be addressed. We have theater companies that come to our performing space. Half of the equipment stays on the truck and doesn't even get off the truck. It's time for us to address these issues. And the community has been very supportive. The Blandon Foundation has invited us to apply for a major grant. We'll have the report on that within 2 weeks. And the community has stepped up behind this. And I think also the understanding that this is a regional project. 40% of our audience members and our students come from a circle 25 miles and beyond. These classroom students are coming from Hill City and from Hibbing, Virginia, Bemidji, from International Falls and beyond. This is truly a regional center. It's in order to be sustainable for the next 30 years, we need to make an investment today.
Representative Anzelt, I don't think we have it in our packet, but former Representative Solberg is here, and he referenced just before the letter that you have from one of the businesses in town. Has someone made reference to that?
I would certainly be willing to do that. We had some recent growth in the area of magnetation, a new system of recycling existing tailings from our taconite. And the family that brought this company to us said that the strong cultural presence in Grand Rapids was their primary drive to relocate in this area. They had many choices for where they could have located, but this was a community that was very much world-class in its art and cultural opportunity. So we are very pleased that people are making economic decisions based on the fact that we do have a vital, well-rounded community with a strong art and cultural focus.
And members, this is what we've heard all over the state. As cities around the state, they used to be their economy used to be grounded in the family farm. That has changed. It used to be grounded in Main Street business. Big Box has replaced that. And so all of these towns are taking a look again at who are we and how do we reshape our economy to attract the business and industry that you just referenced. And we used to think of some of these things as this, as a frill or an amenity that that didn't rise to the top. But this is, in fact, the very way that all of those towns are reshaping their economy to keep them economically healthy, economically competitive. And that letter, it just seemed to me, was a way of talking about it.
Thank you.
Representative McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chairman.
To this testifier, the gentleman, you said that the community is getting behind this. To what extent? Have they raised money at this point?
Yes, sir. Madam Chair and Representative, I did make the point that we had raised already $500,000 to initiate the project, to do the initial design of the project so that we could bring that forward. And since that time, we've had a $500,000 challenge grant, which we have gone out to the community to match. and that grant is almost completely matched. We're at $420,000. So we've raised $1.4 million already before we go out to the community at large for additional funding. We also have a grant request into the Blandon Foundation for $2 million. We can guarantee you that we will have $3.5 million of local community support prior to your vote on the bond.
And Representative McDonald, Representative Anzel mentioned earlier it would be a 50-50.
Madam Chair, I did hear that. Yes, that's good news. Well, that's wonderful for the community to raise such funds. It's an important. I do consider it an amenity and a... your words, Madam Chairman, amenity, and what was the other word? Well, anyway, it is definitely good for the community, but it's definitely not a necessity that the rest of the taxpayers must pay for the rest of the state. But I understand the need for Grand Rapids. It's a great city. We drive through often on our way to Deer River and up to Effie. But question is, if the bathrooms are a safety issue and they're not FDA or ADA required and compliant, thank you, Representative Albright, why wait for money from the state if you have already some money? Why don't you already start that project to get that at least up to date and up to compliance?
Well, we actually, Chairman and Representative, we actually first thought about just doing that Band-Aid approach and that we could do. We would have funds to do that. But the entire facility is not ADA compliant, not just the bathroom issue. We, of course, can accommodate people by taking them into the school and using the school bathrooms if we have too large of a crowd. But we would like to do this as a comprehensive update and bringing not only those particular features of the facility, the bathrooms, but also the actual studios and the theaters also need to be handicap accessible for our people to enjoy performances in equality. So we are doing the entire facility in ADA compliance.
Representative Davids.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a question maybe for Representative Anselser. I'm quite familiar with this project. I went to See America there, Horses of No Name. It's pretty cool. And then my daughter played there on the 15th of the month previous, and with the Duluth conductor that comes over, so it's quite a facility. But okay, it says include lobby expansion. I can understand that, and the restrooms need some work. How much new space are we going to have? And is there going to be new seating in the main auditorium, or does that remain the same size and just refurbished? And then you've got the lobby expansion, new studio theater venue, new loading dock. Is there going to be more seating in the main auditorium, or not?
Mr. Marty.
Madam Chair, Representative, thank you for the question. Yes, we're expanding the footprint of the space by about 15,000 square feet. There exists about 35,000 square feet right now, so we're adding about half again that much space. And we are expanding the seating in the main auditorium. We have a serious issue with overcrowding. There is a small second studio which allows us to do rehearsals and performances concurrently, which we can't do right now. There are events that get canceled and simply can't happen. We are looking at 60 additional square seats in the main auditorium as we update the equipment in the lighting and sound booth and so forth.
So, Madam Chair and Sir, so are you the additional seating be back up further, mm-hmm. or to the sides?
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, it's we're actually moving the lighting booth back, and so that the space where the existing lighting booth exists will provide an additional 60 to 70 seats in that area specifically, and also allow us to have ADA seating. Right now, our ADA seats, our wheelchair seats, are all front row centers in a fishbowl. So anyone with physical disabilities or neurological issues is sitting in the front row in the auditorium, creating a scene awkward for themselves, awkward for the audience. It's not appropriate. It's not acceptable. We're creating seating for people with disabilities in an appropriate manner.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Representative Detmer, and then we're moving on.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and I too have visited the facility, more so wrestling tournaments, but in the gym. But it is a beautiful facility. Is the facility currently used for a teaching station for classes, and how is that going to change during the construction? We're looking at about a $7.2 million project. What's going to happen if it's being used for as a teaching station? How is that going to change?
Mr. Marty.
Madam Chair and Representative, it is not currently being used daytime as a teaching station specifically. It is being used by the school for band, choir, and concerts, for theater performances and events. It's being used daytime for choir rehearsals and things like that. During the interim, we can relocate those events and the meeting space that's needed by the school.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Has there has like the teaching staff, the band director, where do they conduct their practices during the day and so forth? Or the theater, don't they have activities during the day that they would use the facility to?
Mr. Martin.
Madam Chair and Representative, yes, they actually use this when they're preparing for performances, but there is a band room and there is a choir room as well where they conduct the smaller rehearsals on a day-to-day basis.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much. I think the question we ask is why do we care about the economic health and competitiveness of Grand Rapids? And I think the quick answer to that is we all do better when we all do better.
Thank you.
Thank you very much.
Representative Gunther. And we're joined by the city administrator from the city of Jackson. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. It's a pleasure to be here, Madam Chairman and members. We're going to talk today about the Jackson Library. Representative Murphy talked about the overall grant. The reason we didn't go for that overall grant and be part of that is because, frankly, it wouldn't take care of the problem we have. We are going to have, we will match the amount of money we get. However, Jackson is a unique community, and that it's growing so fast, they have to put infrastructure for housing because the main industrial park has got 2,200 employees, and the largest employer is AGCO, and they have 280 out of 1,400 workers live in Jackson, and we got to have money to develop streets and stuff like that. It's a economic development dream, but it kind of reminds me of Lakefield, and Lakefield is such a big city, and it's growing so fast. Every month they have to put in two more classrooms for the schools, and they have to put in curb and gutter. And where you think with all the activity in Lakefield and Jackson, they should have lots of money, but I'm sorry, the cost of maintaining and keeping up with the growth is very, very expensive. Consequently, we can't get the little amount we would probably get from the regular library grant. And with that, I'd like to have my testifiers tell you about the library and its needs. And
thank you.
It's we all visited, and they had wonderful bars there. I remember that.
Welcome, and if you could identify yourself.
Madam Chair, my name is Jennifer Brumlin. I'm the city administrator with the city of Jackson, and with me this morning is Tam Erickson. She's the Jackson Library Director. First of all, I'd just like to thank you for the opportunity to be here this morning to talk about our project. As Representative Gunther alluded to, we have some interesting challenges facing Jackson right now. We've got a lot of opportunities for growth, and with growth come demands on our tax base. And we're faced with an increased tax levy for infrastructure, for housing, and we need to get our library project done. It's a quality of life amenity that we need to have in our community for our residents and to attract new residents. But we simply can't add this project at the time without state bond funds, without causing undue burden to our taxpayers. So I'd just like to briefly go through a little background about the library, our present conditions, some project elements, project significance, and then talk to you about our funding sources and timeline. With you, you have a handout, and I'll just briefly go through here. Our population is 3,354, and we're located in southwest Minnesota. We're requesting $570,000 in state bond funding to expand and renovate our existing library. Our existing library facility was constructed in 1981, and as you can imagine, time has come to update the facility and make it handicapped accessible. The Jackson Library is very important to our community in that it's a service that is available to patrons of all ages and backgrounds, regardless of income, and also helps to promote lifelong learning. Our proposed expansion totals approximately 1,500 square feet. Once the expansion is added on, the total square footage of the library would be 6,700 square feet. Some of the elements of the project include new windows, new carpet, new ceilings, new paint, new restrooms, a new handicapped accessible entrance in our rear of the building for handicapped parking spaces, new information desk, new lighting, and new larger capacity furnace. We also have space for periodicals, collection materials, technology, a teen area, a staff area, a meeting room for the public reference materials and children's materials. I'm included with the handout. We just have some pictures trying to give you an idea of what our current library looks like. Our present conditions, we have deterioration with our skylight and windows. We have a lack of handicapped parking spaces available. Our circulation desk is not accommodating to patrons with disabilities, and we also are lacking off-street parking at the present time because of our entrance where it's located. We also have a lack of storage and workspace, and the exterior of the building is deteriorating.
We have a couple of questions. Maybe we'll go with Representative Huang.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gunther, I noticed that this bill and 1501, the Library Access Bill, weren't on the governor's list. Was there any feedback as to why the Library Access and this library weren't supported by the governor?
Madam Chair.
Aimed at you, Representative Gunther.
Yeah. The bill was not in on time for the governor to see the bill. And that's the reason it wasn't there.
Representative Ward.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I wasn't able to see this, Representative Gunther, on the tour that we came down there. I was laid up, so to speak. But thank you for the presentation and especially the pictures. I'm picture visual kind of person, so it really helps. I noticed a lot of the requests have to do with handicap accessibility. And in our bill last year, and I think I know it's still in there too, we have a handicap accessibility grant program through DEED, I think, that I think would take care of some of those issues. Are you aware of that and know about that?
Representative Gunther.
Thank you, Madam Chairman. Representative Ward, I am aware of that. I believe that's through Department of Labor and Industry, some of that. And it's a good program. We wanted to keep the whole library project all in one place instead of going for here. Forget that. We thought it was more appropriate to have it this way.
Thank you.
And after our committee tour, I will say it's a pretty compelling story when you visit there. And we did look at the language of both the library accessibility grants and the one that the municipal accessibility building, and looked at the language to see. I mean, sometimes you can put together several grants that might work. So mm-hmm. You know, we're looking at some of that language as we.
Thank you,
Representative Spudzinski.
Thank you, Madam Chair. My question is just to kind of, I read through your handout, I appreciate that, but it talks, your 500 and some odd thousand match is going to come from city reserves. Has there been any outreach in the community to actually raise funds locally rather than using, you know, other funds from the city coffers, I guess?
Madam Chair and Board, not at this time. We thought that this would be a great opportunity to fund a project. As I mentioned earlier, we have a lot of demands in Jackson right now, and so we thought that this would be the best route to go.
Representative Erdahl?
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just wondering, how extensive is the space problem? Are you able to increase your numbers of collections? I mean, there's a lot of new good books coming out. I want to make sure there's room for them.
that's a fishing expedition. I think when we were down there, he probably already checked your shelves just to make sure that his books.
Madam Chair, the space issue is mainly in our meeting area, in our training session, and in our public seating area. The collection space won't grow because the collection probably will not grow as we know. But there is a need for additional seating for the public that come into the library and stay in the library, and for in the meeting room for our public programs, children's programs, and technology training.
Sam McDonald.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative, I'm sympathetic to your case here. The city of Delano had, we went through the same thing when I was mayor there with our library, but we used a grant, some matching grant money. Was that available for this project? Or maybe, Madam Chairman, you might know that answer possibly as well, as opposed to a bonding request.
Madam Chair, I know that city administrator and people have searched for ways to get funds, and this is what they came up with, so I assume they couldn't find any available.
Lily, last question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Representative Gunther and guests, thank you for having us down there. It was a great tour that day, I thought. And it was one of those buildings that was built, I think, in the 70s that we saw so much of on our tour that we're having to fix up, you know, around the state. And it was, I'm sure, quite beautiful at the time, but you know, the windows are in need of repair and those sort of things. But one of the things that really stood out to me is that I think one of your doors went through like a kid's area. And, I mean, clearly that just doesn't make a lot of sense, you know, with safety and concerns now. And I think it's a great project, and thank you for bringing it forward.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Madam Chair.
Daphne, you've got the next two.
Yes, I do.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair.
Looking at 2378, early education.
Perfect. And just to remind committee members, we're only looking at sections 2, 3, and 15 of this bill. Section 2, both of these provisions, Section 2 and Section 3, establish statewide pools accessible to all school districts in the state. Section 2 establishes a heating, ventilating, and air conditioning, I'm just going to say HVAC in the future because it's a lot easier, grant program for the repair, replacement, and improving of those systems in schools. Grants are limited to no greater than $1 million, and local districts are authorized to issue bonds to meet the local required local match. As members know, across the state, many school districts have older buildings. This past fall, we've had a funny school year. This past fall, a number of school districts, including a number of schools in my district, were forced to close at the very beginning of the school year because of the heat. And many of the older buildings were not built with air conditioning, and the retrofitting of those buildings, because of the way they were constructed originally, is very difficult and very expensive. Later, of course, they were required to close because of the cold. And if you stop and think about the temperature range between being too hot to hold school and being too cold to hold school, you got to love Minnesota. So the age of the buildings makes it difficult and expensive. This would establish a statewide fund that school districts across the state needing to upgrade their HVAC facilities could draw from. Section 3 recognizes building capacity stresses that many districts are experiencing as they implement all-day kindergarten. Representative Wills referenced this just last week in the K-12 committee. I think she identified that her school district needs to add, I believe it was 21 classrooms to accommodate the provision of all-day kindergarten.
Other districts across the state are experiencing a shortage of classroom space, and those who can project a shortage going out at least 10 years under the language of the bill would be able to apply to the commissioner for support of not less than $1 million or half of the cost of the project of building out their facilities to be able to accommodate the growth of kindergarten. With me today is Jim Grathwall from the Minneapolis Public Schools, and he can answer any questions that committee members may have.
Questions, and again, we're looking at House File 2378, but only sections 2, 3, and 15, because that's the physical plan.
And Madam Chair, I described sections 2 and 3, section 15 is simply the appropriation language.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. The question I had, you were just getting to part of it here, to not to exceed the lesser of $1 million per district or half the total project cost. And as you were just referencing with Representative Wills, and certainly the Rochester Public Schools is something like 30 classrooms short or something of the need to provide all-day kindergarten, that's kind of a drop in the bucket. So I'm wondering how you came up with the amount, $1 million, and then also if how this links to the Health and Human Service provision that we just heard about recently, where they're having a similar grant program for early childhood or preschool classrooms, and if these groups have worked together or if they're just completely kind of siloed, but it was for kind of the same issue. School districts are having to free up classrooms, and so their early childhood programs that are currently being housed in the schools are being pushed out, and so there's money available or going to be available, I believe, for early childhood. So I just wondered on those two issues, if you could answer that.
Mr. Grathwall?
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Jim Grathwall. I represent the Minneapolis Public Schools. Thanks for Representative Dabney bringing this forward, explaining it so eloquently. Just to remind you, this is, though it's brought forward by Minneapolis representatives, it's a statewide grant pool for bonding for both HVAC and the early childhood components. Representative Norton, to your specific question, I'm not familiar with the HHS piece you just discussed. In both cases, we're trying to plan, and the earlier testifiers talked about standards have changed, and as we try and put more early childhood in place with both the all-day kindergarten, which actually in Minneapolis is not going to be a problem in our near future, but the four-year-old program we have, expanded by the Early Childhood Scholarship, we do have $10 million in place for that in our five-year capital plan. I'm not familiar with the Health and Human Service piece. I'll go look that up, all right?
And then just the amount. It seems like an awfully small amount for the needs that are out there, so I just wondered how you'd come up with the million or lesser, and there's flexibility there.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Norton, these are arbitrary amounts. We do have schools, and that Madam Chair noted this at the beginning, schools do have bonding and levy authority. I think the point, and we can make a match. This envisions a one-to-one match, 50% match, and we have to have some parameters around the grants. Confess complete arbitrary numbers there in terms of parameters, and I would bow to the wisdom of the chair and the committees as to what the appropriate parameters might be. But just know we have authority, we can match, but as we change standards, and just to put it in context, and Minneapolis is a property-rich district, our need to air-condition schools as we push a school year started earlier, and remember, we don't build new buildings that don't have air conditioning. We have about 30 or 40 buildings. 30 are air conditioned. About 40 need air conditioning. The cost to do that job is $340 million. That's twice our existing levy for everything. Referendum, health and safety, capital. So that's the bite we're talking about. We have a five-year capital plan that takes $100 million of that off the table. So, but there's still a lot of work to be done there. This just creates a grant opportunity for states or school districts statewide, administered by the Department of Education, to help address that. We have tools of our own, but to get there, I think we need a little support from the state. We think that's an appropriate use of your time, attention, and treasure.
And Madam Chair, I would just say I think it's a huge need, so I don't argue with that at all. I guess I'm I'm wondering what the statewide need really is, because it is just a small number. We have a huge statewide need. How does I mean, it's a step in the right direction. I'm not arguing against it. I'm just wondering if we really know the magnitude of the need out there across the state, and this is a small step, but it'd be nice if we could be looking further into the future so that we do know what the need is going to be moving ahead in the next 10 or 20 years across the state of Minnesota.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And just a quick clarification. Did you mention that the Minneapolis schools do not have a need for additional capital for all-day K?
Right. Mr. Brathwell.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, Representative Woodard, in our five-year capital plan, we, Representative Woodard, we've been at about 80% of our kindergartens are all-day classrooms. To put that in context, we need to add about an additional 20%. We believe we have in our most recent five-year plan, I'm trying to peek over the other members. We
yes,
have capacity.
Kirkos, if you could move your head.
There we go. We have capacity in the near term to add the additional 20% all-day K we need. It's we have a capital need in our earlier to accommodate the scholarships. We're going to be adding about $9.5 million in our this next 5 years to accommodate the physical plant needs of expanding to our four-year-old program.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I don't want to belabor the point, but it's a little bit related to Representative Norton's concerns, and that's the magnitude of the need in relation to the program and what kind of burden are we putting on the department to administer a grant program that might have applications far beyond whatever amount we might be able to lend to the program. You know, I would think any school district would be interested in accessing additional dollars for their HVAC system, you know, repair plans to move forward things that might have been on a longer timeline. And the issue of kindergarten facilities, why wouldn't you want to extend or support your bonding authority by having some state grant dollars? So I'm concerned about the almost unlimited aspect of these programs potentially.
And last one, Representative Erickson.
Thank you, Madam Chair. This is a request. I hadn't asked my question yet, but thank you, Madam Chair. This is really a request of Representative Marquardt for our K-12 Finance Committee. Past practice has been that we've been provided with a historical record of those projects which have been funded in past years through bonding. If we could have that continuation and a new handout at one of our meetings soon. Thank you.
Very good.
And closing comments.
Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members, thanks for the questions. I appreciate the concerns. We do have a little precedent in, I think, the 2012 bonding bill where DEED was administering a $47.5 million general obligation bonding. Normally, K-12 doesn't, or no, your run-of-the-mill districts don't come into you and ask for that bonding authority. This is really about standards have changed as we try and close the achievement gap, have more days earlier in the school year, in the heat of the summer, with our early childhood programs, we think this is a great place to start. The MDE has had a task force that's going to be bringing recommendations on facilities that are excellent recommendations that will strengthen all school districts' ability to meet that match and actually get this job done. I'm just suggesting if the witness before you, the Minneapolis Public Schools, who, thanks to your provision, have excellent bonding authorities, the age of our capital infrastructure and the change in standards, there's a gap between what we can do there. This would be a helpful contribution.
I think we'll move on to your next.
Okay. Thank you very much.
Representative Mahoney apparently has a question.
Madam Chair, Jim, and Mr. Groffo, Jim, just if you're going to use the deed bonding authority process, you might want to ask DEED how much they love doing that, because that was, although I was pretty happy with the outcome, I think about 95% of the rest of the people and the people who administered it were not happy.
Sounds like advice.
Thank you, Mr.
Okay, thank you. Madam Chair. And then we'll have you, you'll be joined by the YWCA folks, Becky Roloff and Stephanie Erster.
Yes, good morning. Good morning again, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair. This is House File 2645. Members of the Capital Investment Committee may not know that last year the K-12 Education Finance Committee under Chair Marquardt established a committee focus and goal of closing the achievement gap in Minnesota. House File 2645 would provide $5 million in bond funds to support key work in closing the school achievement gap before today's smallest citizens even arrive at the kindergarten door. The YWCA of Minneapolis provides high-quality early childhood services to overwhelmingly low-income children, as well as high-quality early childhood curriculum to early childhood staff across the state. Both activities have significant effects in providing strong starts to all children in their care and the care of the staff that they train. We know that early childhood is a key strategy for closing the achievement gap. This bonding request would support those efforts. With me today is Becky Roloff from the YWCA.
Welcome.
Thank you. Madam Chair and members of the Joint Committee, thank you very much for the opportunity to speak today. As Representative Dabney had said, I'm Becky Roloff. I'm the CEO of the organization who is requesting the money from you. We respectfully request your support of an early childhood bonding proposal. We are seeking $5 million in state bonding to undertake much-needed capital infrastructure repairs and improvement to our early childhood facilities. We are committed to raising the matching funds to complete the project. The YWCA operates the largest nonprofit nationally accredited early childhood program in the state of Minnesota. Its core mission is to provide high-quality education to some of the most economically challenged and diverse families in the metropolitan area. We aspire to serve all children who walk into the doors of the YWCA. Our primary group of children we take care of are 6 weeks to 4 years old, plus our after-school program. 68% of the children we serve are from low-income families. 62% are living under the federal poverty line. 64% are from single-family parents, and 80% identify as people of color. Despite these challenges, walking in the door, and I know you know these statistics of the difficulty, the challenge, 93% of our kindergartners are ready for school. This would be compared to the state of Minnesota number of 72% who met standards, with a state poverty rate of between 14 to 16%. The poverty rate of the families that we serve is over 60%. Our approach is unique to early childhood education. It's a transformative model, and it works on the elimination of racial disparities. We have no achievement gap at the YWCA of Minneapolis, and our work is committed that no child in Minnesota, and Minnesota should not have an achievement gap. And with your help and the work that you do, we are working to eliminate that gap for the entire state. As you know, the economics of primarily serving children of low income do not add up if you are an organization primarily dedicated to serving those children. The YWCA does all that we can to ensure that the money goes into our programs, including our scholarship programs. What we need help from you is for our buildings and for our infrastructure. In addition, we have statewide reach. We lead the state in results. Children from Elk River to St. Paul to Chanhassen come to our centers. Our unique and effective curriculum is State of Minnesota, parent-aware approved. It's available to every child provider statewide. We train early childhood teachers across the state. In fact, we train them across the country in culturally responsive techniques that eliminate racial disparities. We applaud your commitment to expanding access to early child education and addressing especially racial disparities that exist in our education system, especially for the very youngest among us. Our proposal is consistent with these efforts, and we truly do appreciate your consideration. Thank you.
And we have Ms. Is it Gerster?
Same voice. Good morning, Madam Chairperson and representatives. My name is Stephanie Gerster, and I'm a single mother to my daughter Katie, who's 4 years old, and she is enrolled at the YWCA Children's Center in downtown Minneapolis. I adopted Katie from Ethiopia in 2011. She arrived home at 20 months old with a bright smile, inquisitive spirit, but many developmental delays. And I knew that she would need the best head start to get her ready for her upcoming school year. She wasn't yet walking or talking. I chose the YWCA Early Childhood Education Program because I felt the programs they offered there created much more than just a place that you bring your kids while you're at work. It was a place that built strong kids and strong families. Katie's teachers were very mindful of her needs and agreed that it was important to place her in with her peers rather than a younger classroom, even though she had a lot of catching up to do. This way, she could watch and model the kids that were her age. For the first few months, Katie got a seat at the table right next to her teacher, who patiently helped her with meals and throughout the day. These dedicated teachers also connected us with speech and occupational therapists, and we all celebrated when Katie finally took her first steps. I could see that she was having a great time and catching up more every day. Just as importantly, I could talk with the teachers and they would answer my questions and assure me that I was also doing a good job. Shortly after Katie came home, I was diagnosed with stage 4 metastatic breast cancer. Beyond the battle that I faced, I knew that Katie was too young to face this new reality. The teachers and staff at the YWCA worked with us to maintain as much normalcy as possible, and Katie was able to stay in school and class every day while I managed all the appointments and the treatment. The support that I received from the YWCA during this time was invaluable. Today, my health is stable and hopefully for a long time, and Katie is growing and a happy and spunky girl. I know that she is building a solid foundation that will give her strength and confidence for whatever lies ahead in her life. And the YWCA has been instrumental in making that happen. And our story is only one of many. I would ask that you please support the YWCA in this bonding proposal. Their work is incredibly important. Thank you very much for your time.
And I know I speak for everyone on the committee when I hope your own personal health issues are
thank you, Madam Chair.
Solved easily. Well, we're thinking of you. To the issue of you referenced the broad range of areas. By the way, members, this is in your packets and it gives some information. I know you went through the MMB process. Is that information in that MMB? Do we have the range of, you said, Elk River to wherever your draw is?
Yes, I believe you have a map.
We have a map
showing all of the family locations.
Representative Norton.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Well, congratulations on your wonderful outcomes. I wish we could have 93% of our preschoolers across the state school ready. That would be fabulous. The question I had was, I don't see a number here of how many children you serve. You have the percent of outcomes, which, again, are wonderful. How many children are in your program?
The YWCA has 7 locations, and we're licensed for 626 children.
And your $5 million, Madam Chair, your $5 million request isn't for all the locations, though, is it? Is it just for the one?
It's primarily for our oldest location, which is the downtown Minneapolis facility.
And can you tell me how many students are there?
150 children are there.
150. Thank you.
Thank you. I think those are all the questions we have. We appreciate it very much. Right. We have one final bill.
Thank you, Madam Chair and Committee.
Representative Newton, and you are joined by Rob Jacobs.
Yes, ma'am. Good morning, Madam Chair, Mr. Chair, members of the committee. I am happy to present to you House File 2565. It's a bill that appropriates bond funds for the Library Accessibility and Improvement Grant Program, and it creates a new Books for Bricks program, which is an idea created by Mr. Robert Jacobs, who's here today to testify. This permits libraries to receive grants which may be used for local matching funds to apply for state bond funds. And because time is very limited, I would like to turn it over to Mr. Robert Jacobs from Brooklyn Park to present the bill.
Welcome to the committee.
Good morning, everyone. Madam Chair, Representative Newton, fellow members of the E12 Finance and Capital Investments Committee. Thank you for allowing me to testify today. It's a great honor. When I finished first grade, I couldn't read. And my first grade teacher recommended to my parents that I be held back. And my dad asked a pretty good question. He said, if we hold him back, what are you going to do that's different? Well, long story short, I went on to second grade, and I was provided with a tutor. And by the time I entered third grade, they tested me again and put me in the advanced reading program. So I know that getting one-on-one attention can make a world of difference, and it certainly made my life, I'm sure, a lot different than it might have been. Each year, the state legislature spends millions of dollars on various community amenities, and we need them. We need parks and museums and libraries. They're important to our quality of life. What if the way we funded these institutions could actually provide a societal return equal or greater to the original public investment? The Books for Bricks program offers a way that we could do this in many cases. According to data from the Minnesota Mentoring Partnership, the cost when a student drops out of school is over $400,000 over their lifetime. And we can track fairly closely where these kids are coming from. They're primarily kids that weren't reading at grade level by third grade. If we can reach these kids by that critical time, we can make a big difference in their lives. So what if instead of funding community amenities strictly by matching dollars with dollars, we did something a little different? What if we matched literacy efforts with dollars? If you can volunteer to help a child read, you can help build something great for your community. Imagine a 21st century version of an old-fashioned barn raising. Nearly everyone can participate. We're spending money on things like libraries anyways. We're not asking for new money. We want to offer the option of using literacy efforts as a way to build libraries. So as an example, what if for every second grader that met reading goals, they could earn $1,000 to a new or expanded library? And for those kids that needed a little extra help, what if their adult reading buddy volunteer could also earn $1,000 for that same library? And what if that effort were recognized in a permanent way inside that new building? When a new library is built, it wouldn't be just the community's library. It would be the personal library of each volunteer that helped make it happen. So we're not just helping kids learn to read. We're giving them a sense of pride in themselves and their communities. And there'll be something tangible that they can point to and say, hey, I helped get that built. That's my library. But we're doing even more than that. We're building important relationships between children and caring adults. My reading buddy and I became lifelong friends. Mrs. Jernberg was retired when she started working with me, but we kept in touch through the years, and when I became engaged many years later, I went and visited her. She was in a nursing home at the time, and she just beamed with pride as she introduced us to other residents. She said, this is my friend, Rob. I helped him learn to read when he was in the second grade, and he came all the way from the Twin Cities. I grew up in Moorhead, by the way. Just to introduce me to his new fiance. Well, I was in town for other reasons, but I wasn't going to correct her. A couple days later, I got a note in the mail from Mrs. Urenberg, and with the note was $10. Now, $10 is not a lot of money, but she said, congratulations on your upcoming wedding, and please buy something to remember us by. Well, I knew that $10 was a lot to her. So my wife and I, we took that $10 and some other money, and we bought a lamp. And every time that I read under the light of that lamp, I think of Mrs. Urenberg. So the Books for Bricks program, we can create opportunities for thousands of Minnesotans to become lamps in the lives of our children. Kids can learn to read. They can help develop pride in contributing to get something substantial built. And they can build powerful relationships with caring adults. When these new libraries open, they'll be filled with wonderful stories, but some of the best stories won't be within the books on the shelves. They'll be represented by the names engraved in bricks, representing the efforts and relationships that were built in tandem with the physical construction of the building. Book by book, brick by brick, we can help our children better build a better future for themselves and leave a legacy for all of us. I hope you'll support the Books for Bricks program. Thank you.
Thank you very much, and I see no questions, so thank you, Representative Newton. And just a couple announcements. Thank you very much. First of all, Chair Hausman, thank you for your very excellent and efficient way of moving things through. I think I can take my seatbelt off now, and we'll be okay. Just a couple announcements for the Education Finance Committee. Tomorrow, it's a joint meeting with the Senate on the Facilities Task Force that came out. And it's right here in room 200. And then the second note is on Thursday, we're going to be acting on a bill, House File 2480, Representative Selzer's bill. So remember the deadline for amendments and so forth is 2 p.m. tomorrow. So members, thank you so much. With that, we're adjourned.